Today we're talking with Ross Mason, founder and VP of Product Strategy for MuleSoft. Ross, you believe in the API economy as the driver of all things mobile and digital. How do you define API economy?
Yeah, for me, the API economy is quite simply the sum of digital transactions between two or more parties over an API. Nothing more dramatic than that. What it means for companies, which is who I speak to most of the time, is increasingly APIs are becoming, you know, very important to the way they build applications, but more importantly for their own survival and being able to compete, they have to take part in the API economy by delivering APIs into that economy and you know, driving their own competitive value through these new digital channels.
Is this about unlocking value? The new role of IT is connecting assets to customers, as I believe you've said. How do you do that in a reliable, secure way?
Yeah, so you know, what I often speak about is you know, the role of IT is no longer to connect back office heavyweight systems with heavyweight middleware. It's actually to partner with the business to unlock assets and connect them to audiences, whether it's customers, suppliers, internal employees. Now, the way to that the right way, in my opinion, is you should have an approach to how you organize those capabilities that you start to unlock in the organization and who owns them and who has access to them. APIs are pretty good on their own just because they have governance built in. That was the whole point of API management. That's why it was born. But if you're unlocking data inside your organization, API management alone is not enough. You need the enterprise-grade connectivity, and you also need an approach to organizing those APIs so that different groups of people have access to different types of assets that make sense to them.
With platforms such as SaaS apps, we're now connecting hundreds of things, many hundreds of things. Does that have a tendency to become brittle at some point and break? And if so, how does connectivity built on APIs solve that problem?
Yeah, that's a great question. The role of connectivity up until about 5 years ago was very much an afterthought, where people would connect things in a point-to-point manner. So they just write code, custom code, to connect one thing to another. I think every company I've ever spoken to have now realized what a bad idea that is, even though it's extremely easy to do and it's the quickest way to move. So it's in direct conflict with doing the right thing versus doing the fastest thing. I think we're in an era, thanks to SaaS, that where doing it that old way no longer works, because there are thousands of endpoints. You're connecting to 1,000 more things, including devices. So what the API offers is a pretty humble approach, but a normalized interface to access resources. So rather than connecting directly to, 15,000 different types of data formats, you actually normalize it a bit into an API, and then you standardize on the API interface between the application and the backend system. So that's why it works. The other thing that I think really matters here is we know what great looks like with APIs. The great thing about the web is it showed us what great APIs look like, and it showed us what sucky APIs look like, frankly. And enterprises can now mimic some of that behavior, whereas with SOA, because there's a lot of the same parallel principles, didn't have that. Every enterprise went on their own path and their own journey, and it was, mileage varied massively on success there.
It's like we used to say, the great thing about standards was that there were so many of them.
Yeah, exactly.
What role does the rise of microservices play in API connectivity?
So I think microservices are going to be very critical, and they're starting to really show some flair. It's not just about the technology with APIs or microservices. With microservices, it's really providing a way of organizing developers around building assets for the organization. So essentially what it's doing is moving from these monolithic ways of behaving in big enterprises to breaking down even developer silos into discrete teams that build certain types of functionality. This echoes great for microservices. It means the underlying technology can change. You can use things like Docker to organize and manage these more effectively in the runtime environment. It also means that developers can specialize around certain types of capability in this inside the organization, and they have some ownership going forward on that. So it's not just project-based, but it's more capability-based. APIs really go hand in hand with this. Once you, as you have lots of, or even some microservices, some of those microservices you actually do want to reuse within the organization. And the only way you can open those up is through an API type interface. So it's fairly common, I think, to people have an API strategy backed with a microservices strategy for certain types of capabilities.
There's also the people issue. You're making developers work very differently than they have traditionally.
Well, and what's really going on, the macro trend is decentralization of central IT, right? Before, everything went through central IT, you know, as projects. Now what you're looking to do is enable groups of developers in other functions to deliver capabilities that help the greater good of the company. With microservices, you're changing the delivery model of how you develop software that is reusable. For APIs, there's two aspects. One is delivering the API, but the other one is actually training the organization to consume APIs that already exist inside the enterprise. So we spend a lot of time with our customers thinking and prescribing how that might actually happen.
You mentioned decentralization. You do talk about three API types: experience, process, and system. And you define that last one as decentralized access to assets. Is that going to cause nightmares for a lot of CIOs? Because now we're getting into the realm of shadow IT, which can be perceived as good or bad.
Yeah. So I think the nightmare for not just CIOs, but even the people who own the data, that, you know, a lot of people have actually invested in SOAP services at that layer, that system layer, but don't open up to any third parties. And the reason they don't is they're worried about what will happen when people come and use it, right? Simple as that. Well, part of the API strategy needs to have the governance policies also defined. The nice thing about APIs is there's much finer grain control over who has access to those systems, how much information they have access to, and how much they can get at any given time. So you can predictively monitor traffic and make sure that you don't overload backend systems. There are some applications where they just can't take any additional load, and we see companies using data staging as a way to sort of augment that. But what happens when you don't open up is worse, which is people go directly to the data, they create views of the data that they then copy somewhere else for performance reasons, so you don't have a master any longer, or they just find other ways, or they start creating new data sets for their specific needs. So central IT and the CIO needs to address it, and they need to trust that the API capabilities today will give them enough control and visibility to manage it effectively.
Otherwise, you have this danger of a boomerang effect where the department goes off, does its own shadow IT project, uses a credit card to sign up for Salesforce or something, and then 6 months later comes back to IT and says, we've been doing this, now we want you to take it over.
So I like the boomerang analogy. That's very good. That's exactly what happens. So, you know, take Siebel versus Salesforce. Siebel, you know, you bought it. Well, central IT typically bought it. They spent a year, you know, evaluating it across everyone. With Salesforce, anyone can go and buy a Salesforce account and sign up some seats, which typically happens. When problems start to occur, which is typically 6 months to 2 years down the line, central IT is then said, well, hey, you own IT, you're going to go and figure this out. Well, they didn't make the decision to go with that particular platform, and they haven't got any background on why it was used. So it ends up being a very large, complex problem, and it's exactly that boomerang problem, is that people will go and do whatever they need to do to get the job done. The role of IT now is to become a partner and a service provider or a capability provider to the business so they can get things done without, you know, creating a lot of technical debt.
That's a tough thing for legacy CIOs to do because they're thinking in legacy terms.
Exactly. Yeah, and there is definitely a big divide between the new CIO and maybe the more, you know, the middle of the bell curve CIO. But I do see the mentality changing. Not everyone will change, of course, but more people understand that, you know, the CIO role has to change.
What is your recommendation to developers and architects who need to connect multiple applications and data sources in the cloud and on premises?
Yeah, well, I won't talk about specifics of which vendor you should choose. I have some biases there. But a lot of companies come to us and they say, hey, we need to connect Salesforce to SAP. How do we do that? And we can show them a demo all day long how to do that. But the question I always ask is, all right, but, you know, how are you bringing Salesforce into your IT landscape? You know, so what is it? It's not just about how do I get data in and out, but how do I get the next 10 connections working efficiently? How do I then bring on other SaaS applications? And what we end up having is more of a strategy discussion around what's your plan for bringing SaaS into your hybrid IT environment. And you know, one of the things you need to think about: onboarding, offboarding, API management controls. So that, you know, I'll give you an example. People, you know, no one's allowed access to SAP in any organization. It's very tightly locked down. But when you buy Salesforce, people are very happy to hand out API keys as if that data isn't important. And the reality is the data in Salesforce is every bit as important as SAP, and you need to treat it the same way, but you need to apply the new consumer dynamics, if you like, of that platform, which means you really need to have an API strategy for unlocking both Salesforce data the right way so that you actually have control over it, and also SAP data. So I think the first thing to do is you can just run ahead and connect the two systems together on our platform and some others, but you should be thinking more about what's my plan to keep doing this again and do it with less and less cost each time, which in my mind is, you know, you asked about developers and architects. Developer solves a problem. An architect solves it each time and gets it, makes sure it's cheaper and more efficient each time. And you need to have an architecture discussion in that type of environment.
So it boils down to access with control.
Exactly. And that's the key thing. I mean, when I talk about API-led connectivity, what I'm really talking about is training the organization to IT organization to deliver self-serve capabilities and assets, training the rest of the organization to consume those, but governing everything through tight controls, through APIs and policies.
Today we were talking with Ross Mason, founder and VP of Product Strategy at MuleSoft. Ross, thank you very much for your time.
Thank you.